It's time for the Dr. Linda Mental Show.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. I'm your host, Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor. And I'm here along with my co-host, Chris Weigel, where every weekend we're here and we're doing life together. And we're really glad you've joined us.
That's right, Dr. Linda. Fantastic to be with you yet another weekend.
Yeah, and we have a special guest this weekend, back by popular demand.
That's right.
Popular demand, right?
Very, very, very popular.
The sports physician and family practice doctor, Dr. Mike Huber.
For those of you who did not listen to the show last time Dr. Huber was here, you missed out. But you can find that show on myfaithradio.com. If you're not familiar with Dr. Huber, we won't hold that against you, but he has practiced in the fields of family and emergency medicine for 27 years.
Means he's old.
That's right.
I've given him a hard time already.
He has a strong passion for sports medicine, has been a team physician at the high school, college, and professional levels.
We picked the best person for this show because we're going to talk about, get ready, you'll be so surprised what we're going to talk about this weekend, Super Bowl.
What's that?
And, of course, if you don't know, it's the Denver Broncos and the Carolina Panthers. Sorry to all you people listening in Minnesota. The Vikings did not get in. And, boy, should we be praying for that poor field goal kicker who missed the opportunity to get in the playbook?
I always pray for the guys that blow it. Although he had a good mentality afterward.
We're going to talk about the Super Bowl. And so, first of all, we need to get our pick. Does anybody have a pick on who's going to win? Who's your team?
Well, this is kind of one of those sentimental things. I'd like to see Peyton win so that he can go out on top, but I've really enjoyed watching Carolina this year, and since they're close to home, I've gotten to know those players a little bit better.
Are you going with the Broncos as well?
No, I think with Carolina because they are so close.
I know nothing about them.
I know some people that work for that program, so we'll go with those guys.
I know Cam Newton is the quarterback, but I know nothing about that team. I have no loyalty to that team. I don't care. I don't want them to win. The only person I know on the Broncos, since the Bears are not in it once again.
Right, so you were out in week three, right?
I was long gone. We know everybody watches the Super Bowl, so even if you're like me and you don't really care about either of these teams too much, we know that it's a big weekend. In fact, we're going to play some Man on the Street to see what people think about Super Bowl weekend. So let's listen to one of our listeners.
Even though I don't normally watch pro sports, I will watch the Super Bowl because I do like the Panthers coming into the Super Bowl as kind of the underdog, not having been there very long. And the commercials are interesting to watch.
A lot of folks couldn't care less about what actually happens on the field, but they will stop and watch the commercials.
The commercials are awesome, and I live with a TV family. The commercials are what we actually wait for. We were talking about this before we started, that everybody talks during the game, but when the commercials come, it's like a sacrosanct time. We all have to be quiet. We have to watch them. We have to evaluate them. I have no idea what we're looking for, but they all seem to know in the room, so it's kind of fun. Well, here's someone else's thought on who he thinks is going to win and what all the hype around the Super Bowl is all about.
It's one of the most highly rated shows in the last 30 years because it's so competitive. I think that's why people like it so much. So I'm sort of split. I'm old school, so I'd really like to see Peyton Manning go out with a win, but I think the Panthers are just too strong for him. I think they will win. I think the Panthers will win.
Panthers fan.
Obviously right. Making his prediction.
That's it. Pretty strong prediction there, too.
It is.
For those of you listening, obviously we're talking about all things football, and later on in the program we're going to talk about the obsession and the dangers of football. But there is one more aspect of the game that we have to cover first, and that is, of course, Dr. Linda and Dr. Mike, the food.
Amen.
That's right.
Regardless of which team wins on the field, food always wins off the field. Notice there are no chicken wings, chips, or salsa left on the store shelves on that Sunday.
And there's not even any in here to help us along.
I know, we can't talk about this and not have this in the studio right now.
I know, really.
I didn't know this until recently. Pizza delivery guys are lined up at gas stations all over town waiting to fill up.
Oh my goodness.
Because they're so busy. And besides the biggest football game of the year, It's the second biggest eating day of the year as well.
You're absolutely right about that. The second to Thanksgiving. Can you believe that?
Really?
Thanksgiving, wow. And the Super Bowl weighs in next. And the football food really helps explain the 10-pound weight gain that most fans pick during the season. I mean, we do like to eat while we're watching TV, let's face it. And so, Dr. Mike, what do you say about the food side of football?
Well, the way I pick teams, the food ends up being comfort food because my teams are usually getting beat pretty bad. So
there is a study that says that if you are siding with the losing team, that you tend to eat a whole lot more. You grab for the carbohydrates, which is comfort food. And if you're with the winning team, you eat less. I guess I'm not going to get fat this Super Bowl season because I don't care about either team, and I don't know what that says about the study. But it's kind of interesting that when you feel bad, you lunge into those comfort foods and you go for it.
It doesn't matter with me. It's the Super Bowl. I don't care who's winning or losing.
You're going to eat?
I'll just eat everything. Yeah. Right.
Let's go through a few food facts because I think these are so much fun. Americans will eat, this is crazy, 80 million avocados on Sunday. That's enough to fill a football field 12 feet deep. Just avocados.
Americans will eat 1.23 billion with a B chicken wings
Sunday.
And you mentioned the size of a football field. That's enough to fill the football field if the wings are 3 inches long.
You have to put them side by side?
Right. You lay them all out on the field.
Who does this kind of math?
Well, we did. How do you think we know? It's enough to cover the football field a little more than a million times.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. So then you add in all the chips and all the dips that go with the chips. And if the average football weighs about 15 ounces, unless you play for New England, it probably weighs a little less. It weighs 15 ounces, then you're looking at about 12,100,000+ footballs worth of chips that'll be eaten on Sunday.
Oh, my gosh, that is just way too many. And then here we go with the money on soda, which we did diet mistakes a few weeks ago. We talked about the dangers of soda. I guess during Super Bowl, nobody cares because the fans will spend $2.37 million on soda. Let's give in a little context. That's enough to buy about 800 tickets to the big game. And we know those tickets aren't cheap.
No. Okay, here's my medical advice.
Okay, though. What's that?
Drink diet soda so you can eat more chips and dip.
Yeah,
because it balances itself out.
Well, and then the diet soda will make you more hungry because of what the aspartame does to trick the brain. So you're going to eat and drink a whole lot during this game.
You doctors really know how to put a fun spin
on it. But we're always trying to get healthy nutrition here.
Domino's expects to deliver 8 million slices of pizza on Sunday.
Oh, my gosh. And they're lining up in those gas stations waiting to go.
That's right.
To fill up their tanks.
And if you line all of those slices end to end, it'll be the length of more than 21,000 football fields.
This last one caught my interest because I don't think I've ever eaten popcorn during Super Bowl Sunday. But there's 3.8 million pounds of popcorn will be consumed on Super Bowl Sunday. And that's about 60,800,000 ounces. That weighs more than 4 million footballs.
You're right. I don't know anybody.
Popcorn.
I've never had popcorn at a Super Bowl party. Have you?
No, it's a waste of time.
Well, obviously a lot of people are doing it, so we don't
filler.
Know. We know that we're going to the parties, and a lot of people are going to be gathering for Super Bowl 50. Mm-hmm. This is like a big deal, I guess. As we've talked about before on this show, if you don't want to score a weight gain during this weekend's game, be sure to load up on the fresh vegetables. I know this is boring. Dr. Mike, you're shaking your head. You're not going to stay by the veggie tray?
No.
At least he's honest. At least control the sugary drinks, right? Try
That's
to drink
right. yes.
water during that game. Maybe that will help. And then watch the portions, although I don't think too many people are going to be watching the portions.
Well, it does make you wonder if all of this attention to food on this game says something about us and professional sports. Dr. Mike and Dr. Linda, listen to this guy and then tell us, are we obsessed with more than just the food?
I wouldn't really say obsessed. I mean, it's not like I have to watch football every Sunday. I do enjoy watching it, though. I'm a big fan of the sport. But I wouldn't really say Americans are obsessed. I think that's kind of like a far-fetched argument. It's an entertainment industry at the root of it all. You could say, if you say Americans are obsessed with football, you could say the same thing about basketball or movies or music. I mean, you could say Americans are obsessed with anything if you look at it that way. It's just something people like to watch and enjoy participating in.
I don't know about that. What do you guys think? I think football is a huge obsession in America.
Well, it's definitely the number one sport that we do watch.
Yeah. And don't you think the Super Bowl is like a bigger deal than the pro basketball championship or any of those kind of things?
Well, it's a one and done. Every other sport is 7-game series and things for the end of their season, and it's one and done.
We are going to get into that. We're going to get into this idea of obsession when we come back from the break. So stick around, because we want to enjoy the Super Bowl, but we also want to challenge you a little bit in your thinking about, are we too obsessed when it comes to dealing with the Super Bowl? Do we put too much emphasis on the sport for maybe the wrong reasons? And so we'll get into that when we come back.
Hey folks, Chris Weigel here to let you know Dr. Linda's on Instagram. Follow her at Dr. Linda Mental.
Well, the other day I was cut off the road by a driver. Now, everything in me wanted to yell, "Hey, watch out!" But I restrained myself, knowing that yelling at the driver would not do much good. And really, it wasn't the best way to deal with my anger. Well, you know, anger easily rises up in most of us. And while anger is a natural emotion, we need to deal with it the right way. So it's not wrong to be angry, but how you deal with your anger is what counts. The Bible tells us, be angry, but do not sin. So what is the biblical way to handle anger? This is a question I answer in my short and easy book to read, Breaking Free from Anger and Unforgiveness. This small book has sold over 130,000 copies. It's because of how practical and helpful it is to everyday living. So if you want to be angry, but not sin, practice what Scripture teaches us. Breaking Free from Anger and Unforgiveness is available on my website, drlindamental.com. That's drlindamental.com, and also available online where books are sold.
This is the Dr. Linda Mental Show. Welcome back. Obviously, it's a big weekend.
Super Bowl.
A little celebration going on today. We're talking about the Super Bowl and talking about these aspects of being obsessed about it and whether or not we worship the Super Bowl when it comes around every year.
I think one of the interesting facts of the Super Bowl is the discussions that have gone over the last few years. The game gets played late in the evening. I think this game starts at 6:30. I mean, it's obviously a West Coast game for them. On Mondays after Super Bowl, there's an increased number of people not showing up to work, students not going to school. I've always wondered why this game isn't played on a Saturday night where you can actually enjoy the festivities for those of us that actually do go to work.
That was wild to me. I didn't even know that. One of the issues is this celebrity aspect of the game, and Americans certainly seem to worship our sports people. We just have this extreme, I think, obsession, almost to the point where it is very out of control. When we're looking at coaches getting paid more than teachers, it's interesting that we just put so much emphasis on who these people are.
Coming from the Texas high school scene,
where
coaches were paid almost 3, 4, and sometimes 5 times more than the higher paid teachers. And I was involved with 2 high schools in Texas. When they built new high schools and new facilities, the stadiums cost more than the high school. So it was very interesting to see the domination of sports.
So do you think it's about the winning? Are Americans just so obsessed? Is there something about identifying with a winner and needing to have a winner? Because even in those high school games, the fans are crazy.
Oh, sure.
So do you think that whole competition thing and winning, and it makes us think we're winners now if we attend this game or we identify with this team?
Well, sure. Even at high school, winning is everything for them, in particular with football.
Yeah.
So when you're putting 10,000 to 15,000 people in a Friday night football game for a mid-level type of high school, then the emphasis has to be on winning.
If we put it in perspective with professional sports, LeBron James made over $20 million per year. That is just amazing to me, considering the average scientist's salary is $77,000. While he gets paid millions to throw a ball into a hoop, there's a whole lot of teachers that are responsible for the education of American youth, whether they're doing that directly, they're influencing the future of our nation, and they're sometimes struggling to put food on the table. Listen to this. The average salary for a teacher is $35,672 per year. Bleacher Report points out that every basket scored by Kobe Bryant. Now, didn't he retire?
This year.
He retired. Every basket he scores, put this in perspective, is equivalent to the average teacher's yearly salaries.
I think the last man on the street interview that we just heard, that gentleman actually said it right. Sports is an entertainment business.
Yeah, it is.
And as long as a Kobe Bryant or a LeBron James can bring in the money that they bring into that business, then they're going to get paid their money's worth. It's almost comparing an apple to an orange. You can't do that when you're looking at a professional teacher versus a professional athlete.
Good point.
Here's what someone said when we asked if she thought America put too much emphasis on sports.
Yes, because I feel that athletics and athletes are put on a pedestal and paid way more than they should be, because I don't see them as an educated population.
Ooh. Mm, well, it is true that a lot of times the kids that are in college will go into professional sports before they finish their degree. I think I read somewhere that the average length of a football player in the NFL is 4 years.
Yeah, that's what NFL means, not for long.
Not for long.
And you're going to tell us why in a few minutes about that. Let's talk a little bit about the commercials.
The game is expecting record ratings this year. Did you know a 30-second ad during the Super Bowl costs $5 million?
Okay, so folks, if you want to advertise your business, Dr. Mike, should we advertise our business here? It only costs us $10 million for a minute.
You just talked about teachers, and I'm a teacher, so consequently,
we don't have that kind of money.
It's not there.
Even doctors don't get paid that kind of money, so let's just put that out there. It's amazing how much money this stuff generates.
The NFL itself generates $9 billion a year. Major League Baseball comes in at second, and they only generate $7.2 billion a year.
Well, we know that there's so much money involved in this, and this is obviously why it drives the whole business. But what we want to get to is the money worth the physical effort? I'd like to move right into that, Dr. Mike, and have you talk a little bit about the physical cost people are paying when they play professional sports. We certainly know that the movie Concussion has been out. Although I haven't seen it, I do want to see it. But you and I are too busy with our jobs to go see it at this point. But it has brought up a lot of attention to something called CTE. And I know we talked about it a little bit before, but tell people what that is and what the concern is with that.
CTE stands for chronic traumatic encephalopathy, and what it is damage or a syndrome of the brain becoming deteriorated through constant trauma. Over the last few years, what we've known by research, and a lot of this research is being done up in Boston, by taking brains of people who have passed away and played in sports, and we've noticed that when you look at their brains have shrunk. They don't have the same structure as somebody in their age bracket would normally have, and so it leads to a lot of both physical and mental ailments. And these people, severe depression is one of them. We talked last time that I was here about Junior Seau and people like that who committed suicide, and it was directly linked to this CTE. And Kenny Stabler, who was a big quarterback of Oakland Raiders,
the snake.
He passed away last year, and the report came out this week that he was actually suffering from that also.
Wow. And so what I understand about that is you can only make the diagnosis at autopsy.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's after the fact. Yes.
And you talked about the last time when you were here, it's the repeated hitting.
It's a disease of repetitious blows to the head.
Yeah.
And I don't think the average high schooler, if that's as far as they get in life with their sports, is really at a danger for that.
Okay.
And I don't necessarily even think that just basic colleges either. But I think when you get to the point where it's year-round, and you really start year-round in college, and it just continues into pros, I think that constant repetition is more of what we're looking at right now.
So ever since we had that conversation on the show a few months ago, every time I watch an NFL game, I keep watching the defensive line. And the offensive line, I'm thinking, these are the guys who are getting hit play after play
Every play. It's a headbutt with the man in front of you. So it's make contact first, and it's usually the head.
So are they at much more risk than maybe the quarterback would be, who hopefully doesn't get sacked a number of times in a game?
In the bigger scheme of things, I think they are at a greater risk of suffering from it. But I think the person who suffers repetitive big blows has a greater risk of suffering from it. I don't remember Kenny Stabler ever having concussions.
Yeah, that's true.
And things like that. He may have, because I was not that old. I think when you look at it, if you have a Troy Aikman or somebody who finally retired after 8 or 9 concussions, those are the people I look at and think that they're probably down the road have a greater chance of it too. But definitely constant head hits.
Well, isn't Peyton Manning somebody who stayed out for a little bit of time because he was having issues with concussions and playing?
Yeah, he had a couple concussions too, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when we look at the game, he's really taking a chance with his future by continuing to play.
Yes. Once you've had a concussion, the next concussions in succession come a lot easier with less force. So it becomes a snowball effect.
So it's like cumulative.
Yes.
Just the more and more you get hit, the more you play. So it must be difficult for those NFL players to try to decide when I need to quit or when enough is enough. And with all the pull of celebrity and the promotion that they get and the money that's coming in, we had a listener send us an email. He feels like it's the gladiator sport of the 21st century.
Oh, no, it is. It truly is. When I watch a game, I'll see somebody take a hit and get knocked out,
yeah.
And then they rush them off and do the NFL protocol for concussion, and they're in the second half. And I'm like, that guy was knocked out.
Yeah.
You know, it's very interesting how the sport is very heavy. You have to think about the business of the sport.
Yeah.
And then these players, it is their livelihood. And if you're out, the next guy is getting the chance to come in and take your place.
Yeah, and I'm sure in the big game, the last thing you want to do is sit out because
yes.
you got a bad blow to the head.
Yeah.
It's certainly something that I'm sure you as a physician watched on the sideline. I'm much more aware of it now because of all the work I do with people with traumatic brain injury, and this fits right into that category. To be fair, the NFL is trying to make it more safe, and they
Correct.
Keep looking
they
at
are.
All these mm-hmm. things that they're changing.
Head
like,
hits. And
yeah,
yes,
head hits and all the different fouls. But it's still a concern when we're looking at this. One of the downsides, I guess, is that the physical cost is there, and there's a lot of money going into this that maybe could go into other things. I don't know. But we're going to talk a little bit more. We're going to even hit a spiritual side to the Super Bowl. Is there such a thing? And we'll do that when we come back right after this break.
This is the Mental Health Minute. Here's Dr. Linda.
What do Thomas Jefferson, Agatha Christie, Pope John Paul II, and Princess Diana have in common? Well, these notable individuals and many others, past and present, share the habit of journaling. Hi, I'm Dr. Linda, the relationship doctor, and I've got some tips for you on the value of journaling. Whether you're just writing down a few thoughts or pouring out your heart on paper, journaling has some real benefits, like getting a handle on your emotions, or a better understanding of other people, or even organizing your priorities. Sometimes reading your older journal notes will help you appreciate the sweet little details of life you enjoyed, but maybe have forgotten. One of the best benefits of journaling comes when you look back and you see how the Lord has been there in all your circumstances, directing your steps and taking care of the things that matter to you. If you've not considered journaling before, give it a try and see which of those benefits journaling might bring your way.
So you don't tweet and you don't post? No problem. Check out the relationship doctor, Dr. Linda Mental, on myfaithradio.com. Welcome back to All Things Super Bowl.
Ooh, Super Bowl.
You're back at it again.
I know. I was a cheerleader in college.
Oh, there
Ron,
we go.
There you go.
It's just coming out.
Better
yeah.
be to work on Monday. I'm going to be watching.
That's
so.
Right. I'll be there. We will not miss work for this.
It's the Dr. Linda Mental Show. And
that was Dr. Linda Mental yelling.
That was Dr. Linda Mental. This is Dr. Mike Huber with us for this program. We've noted a number of problems around the obsession we have with the Super Bowl and other sports, from the food we eat to the players that we idolize, to the physical risks the players are taking. But not all sports are bad, Dr. Mike.
No, not at all. And there's a lot of good that comes out of sports. And almost all professional sports, whether you're looking at football, baseball, golf, PGA and stuff, they all have huge charitable organizations that have been developed a lot by the players, some by the teams, and some by the organizations themselves. The NFL actually has a program where they vote and nominate somebody to be the NFL Man of the Year. So every team puts a candidate up for that, and it's usually one of the players who has had a tremendous amount of community involvement, has developed charitable organizations that he helps develop and then maintain. So there's a tremendous amount of good that comes out of these people. So it's not all about me and about themselves and stuff.
Yeah, and we need to remember that, because there are a number of causes, and I mean really good causes. There are players that work with sex trafficking and all kinds of hunger programs all over the country, clean water for other people. There's just a lot that they do. There is a lot given to charity and a focus on helping a lot of kids. There are certain players that visit hospitals all the time,
yeah.
go to cancer wards.
There's a tremendous amount of energy that goes on their time off to work within the community to help their communities.
That's a positive. I think the other positive, in terms of emphasizing some of the good things, you do get together with family and friends, and it is a lot of times a really good time, although you and I talked about sometimes all the people that are around the televisions that make it hard to watch the
game. I'm very much a loner because I want to watch the game. And the fact that everybody talks during the game and then does quiet during the commercials drives me insane.
I know my husband is the same way. He's like, I don't know if I want to go to a Super Bowl party because I really want to watch the game, especially if his team is playing.
Well, it's also annoying to be in a room full of people, pardon me for saying this, who couldn't care less about football the rest
of
you.
Yeah, I know.
And then all of a sudden, the Super Bowl rolls around and they're a huge football fan. It does make you want to watch the game alone.
When Carolina does win, how many Carolina fans are there going to be in the country after that?
Yeah, right? Exactly. So it's a good time. It's good to be with friends if you're not that intense about the game. And there's also the good food that we talked about that people do cook up. But let's keep it in perspective. I guess that's one of the issues. It is only a game. And it's so funny when we talk about the spiritual side. I've had these questions posed to me. Does God know the score of the Super Bowl?
Well, sure, he knows.
Of course he knows. He knows already who's going to win. He knows what's going to happen. Then the other one that I love is, when both teams have praying players, who does God listen to? I think he listens to everybody, don't you?
Right, yeah.
I don't know if it makes a difference in the game. Then the other question is, does he care who wins?
No.
Is that our consensus? I think in the scope of eternity, it isn't going to be a big deal who wins. But it is good to talk about praying for the players.
Yes.
And you said something before we started the show about when people get injured.
Well, in particular, we used to do this in Texas, and I've been out of Texas for a few years now, so I'm not sure if they still do this in public schools. But I know here I've been affiliated with one of the Christian high schools, and so we do. We pray if somebody's injured. We actually pray before the game in a public announcement, pray for the players, pray for the coaches, pray for the officials,
mm-hmm.
that everybody mm-hmm. comes out of this healthy and that nobody's injured. And so I think it's always been a big part of it. It's a very violent game. I pray whenever somebody, the poor Minnesota kicker or Scott Norwood for Buffalo with the wide right thing. I mean, those guys are under a tremendous amount of pressure. It's the reason we watch that sport is we watch for the glory of a great play. And we always watch and wait for that big mistake to happen.
So if you want something that you can do for the Super Bowl, even if you're not a huge fan, you can always pray for the players, pray for the game, pray that people are protected. And then to put the game in perspective, anything that we put before God is idolatry. So we never want to take the Super Bowl or any kind of sports and put it before our relationship with God. It's very important to keep our lives balanced and centered. Well, that's all the time we have today. Dr. Mike Huber, thank you for joining us and bringing your insights on what the Broncos and the Panthers face this weekend. And many thanks to our producers, Katie Reschetko and Pam Miller, our engineer, Caleb Carpenter, our man on the street, Derek Battle, and our social media coordinator, Hannah Duke. And thanks, of course, to you, my co-host, Chris Weigel, who makes this show a conversation.
Go Panthers.
Thank you, Dr. Huber. Thanks so much for being here. You not going to say go Broncos?
I'll say go Peyton.
Okay. And tune in next week for our show on Valentine's Day. We've got some exciting, sizzling things for you to listen to there. Well, from all of us here at Faith Radio, talk to you next weekend. In the meantime, remember, we are here doing life together, and it's better when you don't have to do it alone.
The Dr. Linda Mental Show is a production of WQLU-FM 90.9 in Lynchburg, Virginia.